The New Testament reading today is from Matthew 5, and you can find that on page 4 of the New Testament in your pew Bibles. Listen to the word of the Lord. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountains, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so men persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, and if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trodden underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Tomorrow night, Becky and I are flying to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Jonathan was to have joined us actually on Tuesday. We were all going to be attending a Presbyterian conference at First Presbyterian Church in Tulsa, and obviously Jonathan is not able to go. Jonathan was going to, on Wednesday night at our worship service at this event, he was going to share about how God has been faithful through this entire journey with Amy. And so obviously he is unable to do that. So I have been asked in his stead to do that. And so one of the things I've determined is that it is not entirely my story to tell their story, but it is my story to tell our story as a church. So if you think of it, if there's something you think that people from across the country gathering in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that you want me to convey about our experience in seeing God's faithfulness as a church, please let me know before you leave today, because it's only a 3-minute thing, but I'm like sweating bullets because I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to say. So, you know, any input you could give me would be really great. Well, you know, it's this time of year, and specifically probably in the last week or so, when the gray days continue to beat down on us and the cold, that I sometimes think, what if Christmas were actually held this time of year rather than in December? Because in December, we're still kind of excited about winter. Now, I should probably say kind of excited about winter, because I'm never excited about winter. But you know, the first snowfall, you know, kids get giddy. And by the way, you wouldn't believe how off the wall college students get about the first snowfall. You would think they're, in fact, it just reminds me, I say to them occasionally, there's not a whole lot of difference between college students and kindergartners, and that goes over really well, by the way. But you know, we're excited for Christmas, and there are lights, and even though I think in Indiana, December is the grayest of our months, it doesn't seem to bother us, because there's this focus on all the festivities surrounding Christmas and all the focus on light. And when we get to this time of year, we really need to focus on light. We need a focus on hope. Now, you know, I tend to kind of geek out on weather-related things and other stuff. And I've noticed we've gained, I think, almost 50 minutes of daylight in the late afternoon and the evening since December 21st. And so this is hopeful. Catchers and pitchers reported this last week for spring training, so there is hope that spring is coming. But we really do need light. We need to see the sun in its glory, and we need that hope that there is a better tomorrow. Light is extremely important to our lives. Now, the passage that Leanne just read for us, you're probably familiar with. That first number of verses in chapter 5 is known as the Beatitudes. And what's always, you know, it's such a strange listing of things that Jesus says, that you are blessed if you, you know, are poor in spirit, if you've been persecuted, all of these things. And I have often thought there's not a whole lot of hope necessarily in that passage, until we start to think about who Jesus was talking to and the times that he was in. And there are those who believe that this whole passage, this whole Sermon on the Mount, was a challenge to kind of the political structure of the day, not just the Romans, but also the religious structure that kind of also imposed a political structure as well. These folks that were gathered on this mount were not honored in their society. The people who had power, who had the political authority, who had religious prestige, they had honor. And in fact, most of these folks felt that they had no control over their lives, no honor. They were not esteemed in any way. These are not the kind of statements, as we go through the Beatitudes, these are not the kind of statements that a culture is going to say, man, we value those who are poor in spirit. We value those who are persecuted. That's just, not even in our culture are we going to say those are our values. And so this is a really counter-kingdom cultural kind of challenge that Jesus is giving to his audience. So that when we get to verses 13 and 14, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. The focus here, which seems to be so different, at least to me, from the first 12 verses, the focus here is that Jesus is challenging his audience that they are honored. They do have esteem. They can have an influence on the world. This said, in a world in which people felt like they had very little influence. There are times we may feel like we don't have a lot of influence. This has been for us in the life of the church a really up and down week full of all kinds of emotions. And sometimes in those kinds of moments, the last thing that we're thinking about is, I want to be an influence on my world. I have tried over the years to become a student of light. I'm fascinated by light. Part of that is because I teach video production, and so one of the things I teach students is how to light scenes. And one of the things that I try to teach them is a concept based upon how the world is created. We don't always think of it this way, but we have one big light that lights the world. We call that the sun. And that big light creates three things. It creates what is called the diffused value. It creates shadow. And the third thing it creates is something called specular highlight. Now, those are terms that we don't always use. But I think these three characteristics of light can teach us how to be light in this world. So let's begin with the first one, diffused value. What does that mean? Well, all it means is that the sun illuminates the world. And in fact, when we look at any form of image making, photography, one of the things that we talk about is that we use the minimum amount of light to achieve maximum detail. So for instance, My jacket is a corduroy jacket. Now, it's dark, but if we were to light me, we would want to put enough light on this so that we could see the detail of the jacket, so that we could see the texture, not only of the jacket, but of my hair. That's what is meant by illuminating something, just enough light so that we can see the detail of whatever it is we're looking at. So Jesus says to us, you, or let's just say we, are the light of the world. Our job, what that means is we illuminate. We provide just enough light to give maximum detail. One of the things that's easy to do in our world today is to decry the moral condition of the world that we live in. And rightfully make the pronouncement that we live in a dark world. And we do live in a dark world. But if we continue with this focus on light, darkness is the result of the absence of light. Now, I know, for those of you that have been trained in more kind of art things, when you look at the primary colors, black is the result of those additive colors coming together. But in light, in sunlight, it is the absence of those colors. No light whatsoever produces darkness. Having lived in an urban context, I can attest to what happens when the Church of Jesus Christ moves out of the city. And there is no light in the city, in the neighborhoods. What happens is darkness immediately comes. And the question that those of us, when we lived in the city and we were working in urban ministry, the question that a lot of us posed to the church was, what do you think happens in the city if the presence of Christians is removed? No wonder our cities are the way they are, because so many people have fled and the light of Christ is gone. What this means on the positive is that our mere presence anywhere we go has the potential to bring light. If you want to think of it in terms of morality, go ahead. Think of it in terms of morality. Our mere presence has the potential to bring morality. But it's not morality alone. This passage in Matthew 5 really points to God, and I'll say more about that in a little bit. But it is the idea that our light produces good deeds. Those good deeds point people to God. They show who God is. And so when we talk about this first characteristic of light, of illumination, what we are able to do as followers of Jesus Christ as the light of the world is we are to illuminate the path to God for those people who are around us. We can point out who God is and where he can be found. One of the things that this passage also says is that our light can't be hidden. Now, in contrast, it mentions that salt can lose its flavor. And when that happens, it's no good and we toss it out and melt ice. The idea of lighting a light and then hiding it is really absolutely ludicrous to Jesus. And even his audience, there was no way you would ever think of lighting a light and then hiding it. Why would you even do that? What the passage does say in verse 15, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. The idea here is that the light needs to be used properly. You're not going to stick it under something. You're going to put it on a lampstand that has been designed to maximize the light that is being thrown from that object. It would be improper if we used our light only when we are at church. Now, we are light when we are together. And think about how bright that potential is. But it would be improper for us to just show our light here at church. And we know this is something that all kinds of people in our culture talk about as of Sunday Christians, right? That we just act the way we want the rest of the week, but we show up Sunday morning and we act a certain way and we look a certain way, and in our minds we're thinking, now we're light. But if we really come to grips with this passage, our light is not something that we turn on or off. It is there all the time, but it has to be displayed in a proper way. So the challenge for us is, if we are illuminating the world around us, how do we do that that makes proper use of the lampstand? The second characteristic that light creates, that the sun creates, not only is proper illumination, but it's shadow. Now, over the years, we are taught that shadow is a bad thing. Stay out of the shadows. You know, shadows are where bad things occur. When I was a student in college and I was learning lighting, I remember I was with some other students, and we were in a TV studio and we were lighting this scene, and we thought, let's eliminate all shadow. We worked really hard at eliminating all the shadows, and we did a good job. The finished product looked awful. Everything was flat, because we need shadow in our world to give us our dimensions. Without shadow, we can't see perspective. We can't see depth. We can't see where we're going. We can't live in a flat world. We desperately need shadow. One of the things, if shadow is still a bad idea to you, then let's use the word shade, though I'm not entirely sure I like the word shade. But what is shade? It can be cool and comforting. It may be a place of transition for many. You know, the reality is, while we are illuminating the world, we don't have all the answers. We sometimes act like we do, and then sometimes when we know we don't have the answers, we feel that it's a real threat to our existence because we can't answer things. But as time goes along, I'm realizing more and more it is okay that I don't have all the answers. If I had all the answers, then I could start to become God. I could claim to be God because God does have all the answers. But I'm not God, and you don't want me to be God. And consequently, I don't have all the answers. And sometimes the shadows that we create as we are the light of the world may just be enough for somebody to begin the transition from darkness to light. And truth be told, we live much of our lives in the shadows. It is that gray, murky world where we wonder if we're doing the right thing. Or we wonder if God's even awake. What are you doing? Why are you allowing these things? This is the shadows. But shadows are necessary. And God created the world in a way that we have shadows. And if there is anything that I have learned over the years as I've studied light and even studied a passage like this, is I'm not going to be afraid of those shadows. I'm going to embrace those moments when I live in this not totally light, not totally dark stage, this stage of gray. And by the way, as much as I bash winter and I really don't like winter, I really have tried hard, especially this winter, to embrace the gray. I'm not sure how. part of it, I think, is just by ignoring it. But shadows are not something that we need to fear, because it is the way the world has been created. The last characteristic of what the sun creates. It creates the diffused value, our illumination. It creates shadow. And then finally, something that is referred to as specular highlight. And all that means is a reflection of the lighting source. So think about nice photography that you have had done, a portrait. And if you look at it and you look really carefully, there's this little bright spot in people's eyes. That is the specular highlight. If you zoom in really closely, what you can see in that little bright spot is you actually can see the lighting instrument that was used to light that portrait. It's a reflection. It is one of the reasons why in television and movies and things, makeup is used on performers, because this area tends to get specular highlights, and we don't really want that. It's okay in the eyes, not so good on the forehead, right? So that is the third thing that the light creates, is it creates a reflection of itself. Jesus, as we know, is the light of the world. In John 8, Jesus spoke to them saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Now, when you really think about it, it's an incredible thing that he says, "I am the light of the world." And in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, "You are the light of the world." That's an incredible thing to have both of those. But think about specular highlight. Specular highlight is the reflection of the lighting source. We are the light of the world because we are to be reflecting the true light of the world, Jesus. In verse 16 of this passage, it says, "In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." This word "good" in the Greek means good in appearance, which is in contrast to inwardly good. So let people see your good deeds, your outward good deeds, good in appearance. It's the idea of when we meet someone and you're just impressed because they say the right things, they act the right way, they're charming. You walk away and go, "They are good." It is that same kind of thing that our deeds need to be pleasing to the people we come in contact with. The assumption, of course, is that we're actually doing that. Jesus is not commanding them do good deeds. He is saying, "Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good deeds," those pleasant appearing kinds of things that you're going to do. We do these things because we want people to see Jesus. We want them to see the specular highlight. We don't want that on the forehead. We put powder and stuff there. But in this case, we want to be a big reflection of who Jesus is. We must become Jesus to people. And so I think that requires of us a constant introspection, of asking ourselves some questions. Do people see us as loving as Christ loves? Do people see us as peacemakers? Do people see us bringing healing to relationships or situations? And then I think we need to be talking with each other about what it means to do good deeds, to be light, to reflect the light of Jesus. I suspect that you are all familiar with the children's song, "This Little Light of Mine." I think it gets it right of letting our light shine, but it gets it wrong when it says, "Don't let Satan blow it out." Because as Jesus says here in this passage in Matthew 5, it's not going to get blown out. Yes, salt will lose its flavor, but a light remains. Our light is always shining. So we ask ourselves, what are we illuminating as we walk through this world? Are our good deeds pointing people towards Jesus Christ? Is it even possible in this time of emotional upheaval that we as a congregation experience because of Amy's illness, can we live like light even in that moment? When we want to kind of look inward and draw the world around us and just have everything be right, can we still be thinking of what and how am I illuminating the world around us? It is tempting to illuminate only ourselves. And so we need each other to encourage each other in those moments that we are struggling. We need each other to encourage each other to be light. In Ephesians, Paul writes, "For once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light, for the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. Try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord." So when we finally do see the sun, and you look at how that light is illuminating the world, I hope you think of these three things: the diffused value, illumination, the shadow that is created, and then the reflection of that lighting source. And one of the things that those three things do is they create dimension and contrast. We ought to be people of considerable depth. We ought to stand out. That is a contrast that is a clear thing that we ought to be doing. May we be truly, as Jesus says, the light of the world.
You have been listening to a podcast from Wabash Presbyterian Church. For more sermons and resources, please visit us at wabashpresbyterian.com.